No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, and today I have a special guest host, Christian Sager, writer and host extraordinaire. He's the guy who tells me what things I should say on certain videos.
Yeah, I put the words in your mouth on Brain Stuff and sometimes on What the Stuff. I don't know if you've done one of my What the Stuff scripts.
So anytime you see me on video and you think, wow, Jonathan seems particularly well-spoken, it's probably because Christian wrote the words.
Oh, I don't know about that. you ad-lib all the big words.
Yeah, well, I just make them up. That's all it's... But when I asked Christian if he would come on to the show, you agreed and I gave you the choice. Like, you can pick anything you want that's tech related. And you came back with something that was really interesting because, I know that this is an area that you have followed quite a bit. I am sort of only tangentially connected to this. I get a lot of it through osmosis. I am talking about digital comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so the digital world, the digital revolution, you might call it, really shook up a lot of established industries.
Especially in areas like our own in terms of content creation.
Sure, yeah. In everything. We've seen it so many times, right? We saw it first and foremost, I'd say, we saw it with the music industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
iTunes was incredibly disruptive. We saw lots of different companies resist that as much as they could in various ways, often by putting terrible DRM onto files.
Right, yeah, which is something we'll talk about with digital comics.
Right.
It's still going through those growing pains. Yeah.
One nice thing I'll say is that as far as I am aware, no one in digital comics has installed DRM that would create a critical vulnerability in your computer system.
Oh.
Unlike what Sony did with their music.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so. I have yet to hear about anything like that. But, wouldn't put it past some publishers.
Right, right. I would hope they wouldn't do it on purpose, at least.
Right.
But, we've also seen it in film. We've seen it in television. We've seen it in publishing in general with Amazon, the Kindle, and the Nook, and all of that, the e-publishing furor.
But now we're seeing it also in comics. And when I think digital comics, there are two things that come to mind. Either I'm thinking about comics that are produced digitally.
Right.
And then they may be printed in hard format, or they may be distributed that way, or just strictly the distribution. And we're really going to be talking about the distribution side today.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, like digitally made comics started in probably like the early 90s, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're going to be talking about today. And in fact, like almost all comics have some kind of digitally made component nowadays.
Sure.
Pretty much everybody colors digitally now.
Yeah.
And letters digitally as well. But we'll be talking about the distribution. And I want to clarify, too, that digital comics and web comics are two different things.
Right.
Digital comics are comics that you would maybe find in a print edition. Not mm-hmm. always. There are some digital first editions, but that are distributed in digital means, either through an app or a PDF. And we'll talk about, you know, the different means of distribution later. Mm-hmm. But web comics are really comics that are hosted on websites and are meant to be read on a desktop.
Yeah. We actually, way back in the day, TechStuff did an interview with Chris Straub, who's a web comics artist. And we talked about web comics then. So if you guys are interested in the subject of web comics, check that old episode of Tech Stuff out. But we're really going to talk about this distribution model and the consuming, like how you consume the comics, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just how they are distributed, but how the audience is able to experience that stuff. And clearly, one of the big things that has really fueled this is the move to the mobile platform. I mean,
yeah,
I know there are people out there who still will read comics on their laptops or desktops, but that tends to be, it's not ideal.
It's difficult. Yeah. When I was working on my thesis in college, it was about comics, and I had to read something like 300 comics for this thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was before I had a mobile device. So I was like flipping a laptop on its side
right.
and reading a PDF, like in my lap upside down.
Yeah. That's not ideal. 'Cause as you were pointing out right there, just about from that description, the layout of a typical monitor is where you've got that landscape layout rather than portrait.
Yeah.
And portrait's really what you need to experience a comic book in the format that we're used to here in the United States.
In print format. Yeah. And that is something that both web comics and digital comics have and are experimenting with.
Yeah.
There are some digital comics that are designed specifically for digital and are in landscape format
mm-hmm.
and have an interesting design in that their panel to panel transitions, you wouldn't be able to get away with it in print because it would be so slow, but like be the same image and all of a sudden a word balloon would pop up as you scrolled to the next one.
Right.
So it's almost like a cross between very slow animation and print comics. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, I guess the next step will be interactivity where it becomes.
Oh, they're there.
Different.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah. Marvel is already, they're all over it. Every South by Southwest, they announce all this interactivity stuff that they're going to embed into their digital comics over the next year. And then like half of it happens. Like,
yeah. I can't wait to get my hands on it because I would love to have the moment where I go on and on to everybody about how the comics I have manipulated make so much sense and they're so consistent internally, and then after three issues say this is hard.
Yeah, right. If comics only had the same comments fields that our YouTube videos had, I can only imagine how horrible the things would be that people would write in there.
Readers did kill off Jason Todd, so
yeah.
There's some precedent for that. So now that we have these mobile devices that are often in the layout that at least are, it can be modified, a comic can be modified to fit it, perhaps in a way that is closer to the print editions that we're used to in the United States. We really started to see the digital comics industry kind of take off. And we'll talk a bit about how popular they've become. And I love that. In the notes, we're going to be relying heavily on Christian's notes here, and he is an exhaustive note taker. I didn't have to lift a finger for this episode, So I thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it helps that I used to write about comics for CNN before I worked at How Stuff Works, and I did articles and interviews with people in the digital comics world as it was sort of starting up while I was over there, and also self-published my own comics.
Oh,
and
awesome.
So, and I've worked with digital publishers. I've kind of gone through the system from the back end, and I understand how it all, the behind the scenes of it, how it works. In fact, my graphic novel is currently in queue at Comixology. I'm waiting to try to get that up there for sale.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's one of the things that's really cool about the digital approach, is that it opens up a distribution process for people who otherwise wouldn't have that access.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So like, without getting too far into it, because we could spend hours talking about it, most print comics in the United States are distributed through a company called Diamond Distribution. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, Diamond made a decision that they would not distribute books unless they could guarantee that they would sell, I think it was at least, I want to say $1,500 worth of copies, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for some small press people really is. And so they lost the ability to distribute their small press books to stores around the country unless they were local. Digital has sort of replaced that for them, that they can get eyes all around the world on their books, no matter how small and unknown they are.
Yeah. And it gives an opportunity for discovery that wouldn't be there. We can talk more about the potential for discovery, I think, toward the end of this. So the first big one that we need to talk about, the first big platform for digital distribution, is Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one, anyone out there who is familiar with digital comics, you probably have this app. It's one of the most well known, and it's been around for a while in various forms. The earlier ones were more of kind of a discovery tool, and then became a digital reader further on in its existence.
Yeah, Comixology, the company, if I'm remembering this correctly, they started off as sort of like a way to keep track of the comics that you bought at the store every week.
And also it would allow you to know what was on the pull drawers of your various comic book shops.
Yeah.
So if you were in the market for a specific issue of a specific comic, you could go on there, check it, and they would have a database there, essentially, that would have all the comics listed at the various stores near you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then giving you the addresses, of course, of the stores, so you could go find them. Yeah, but it they released their app for digital comics reading was called just Comics. And no one that I know in the comic book world, readers or creators, ever referred to it as Comics. They always just called it Comixology. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like maybe a year and a half ago that they finally gave up and were like, all right, fine, Comixology is our brand name.
We're not going to fight it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've facilitated more than 200 million downloads.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's through desktop, tablet, phones, you name it.
Yeah. Through all the different platforms. It does not necessarily mean 200 million purchases. We are talking downloads here. Same sort of thing. Like if you ever read a press release from a company that talks about how many units shipped and units sold are two different things. And Apple says that Comixology is the highest grossing iOS app that is not a game.
Right.
So
yeah. So like stuff like Candy Crush is obviously bigger than Comixology, but, in terms of content, Comixology is killing it on iOS.
Yeah.
And has been for a couple of years now.
6 billion pages of comic books and graphic novels.
Mm-hmm. I think it's ranked 11th overall, or at least it was in 2013.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk later about this, but Comixology and their new owners, Amazon, had a little bit of a kerfluffle with Apple earlier this year. So I'd be curious to see at the end of this year where they stand in those rankings.
You know what? I want to talk about that for a second. So the kerfuffle you're talking about here is that the way Apple's policy is that if you have an app and you allow in-app purchases, Apple takes a cut of those purchases, of the fee.
In the case of Comixology, it was 30%, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's it across the board for Apple.
Oh, okay.
For any in-app purchase, for any app that's in the Apple store, Apple gets a 30% cut. And I don't know if you guys know this out there, Tech Stuff Land, but Apple and Amazon are kind of competitors in many ways. And generally speaking, if you are producing something or you're distributing something, you want to be able to get as big a cut of that as you possibly can. This also is tough on creators, because if you look at the slice of the pie that creators get from print versus digital, you would think, oh, well, with print, you take all those printing costs out. You take all those shipping costs out. All the physical warehouse space, all of that is gone.
Yeah.
All you have is a file. You must be raking in a huge amount. Actually, no, that's not true.
Right. Yeah, because you're looking at the breakdown first between Apple and Comixology,
yeah,
and then between Comixology and the creator.
Right.
Yeah.
And so by the time you get down to it, it might be that the creator is actually making less per issue than they would with a print. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Especially because usually the cost of digital comics is less than, yeah, it would be for print.
Yeah. And so Apple and Amazon are kind of butting heads in that sense. So Amazon is looking at, I think they've already done it where they're, you would purchase the comics outside the app and then you could read them inside the app.
Yep. Yeah. So they modified the Comixology app. First of all, Amazon bought Comixology, I want to say in March,
yeah,
of 2014.
I know it was the spring of 2014.
And maybe a month and a half later, Comixology announced that they would no longer allow for in-app purchases, mm-hmm, within iOS devices. Interestingly enough, if you're on an Android device, you can still make in-app purchases.
Huh.
And I would suspect if you're on a Kindle Fire, you probably can as,
yeah,
well.
I would imagine it's encouraged.
Yeah. But it basically works the same way as like an Amazon Kindle app would, mm-hmm, work on an iOS device. And, mm-hmm, that, like, the same way, you can't buy your eBooks through the Kindle app. You have to go to Amazon's site, buy your book. And then when you go to the Kindle app, you can download it through your account. So it works the same way now with Comixology.
Right. So that way they bypass the in-app purchase and, yep, Apple doesn't get that 30% cut.
Yep.
So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out politically, because Apple could say, well, we'll just make sure that this doesn't get featured in any way so that,
exactly,
you know, it's not that we might not necessarily remove it from the store, but we don't have to, you know, we don't have to profile it in the store either.
And there were a lot of people in the comic book world who were up in arms about it when it happened as well, because they felt like that the in-app purchases allowed for more sort of compulsive buying.
Sure.
Or impulsive, rather, buying, while you were reading. Let's say you finished Hulk number 12 and you said, wow, I immediately want to read Hulk number 13. All you had to do is just hit a button and it would charge your credit card and download.
It enabled you.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And now you have to, you know, go to the desktop version, pay for it there, and then download it in. So they're worried. I think they're worried about the money, but I'm very curious to see what the 2014 figures look like, because 2013's numbers were very high. $90 million,
yeah,
digital comics made.
Yeah. Which was almost a 30% increase over the year before. If you look at year over year gains, it looks, the story seems to be negative if you were to just look at the percentages.
Right.
And it's only because you don't realize how young this industry is. So from year one to year two, it was a 700% increase.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you had like a 200 something percent increase, and then a 100 something percent increase, and now a 30% increase. And you're thinking, wait, that increase is going down. But you have to realize that that year one, that was like $1 million. And year two was $8 million. So the figures, while the percentages are going down, the actual figures of money are much higher. We're talking $90 million now. That's a huge amount of money, mm-hmm, for something that's still so young as this particular form of distribution.
And it's still a smaller percentage than print holds in the
comic book
industry.
Yeah.
But it is gaining. At the end of every year, when you see interviews with comic book creators or publishers or editors, and they say, they're asked what their prediction is for the following year, they usually say digital's going to get bigger.
Yeah.
And it always does.
Right. Yeah. And the nice thing for the comics industry right now is that it does not appear to be taking a huge, like, it's not taking that chunk out of the print side. I think that for one thing, the success of comics in other forms of media, mm-hmm, now granted, you know, we should say comics go well beyond superheroes.
Right.
Superheroes, yeah, is what we always think about because they are the high profile ones, but comics are all sorts of genres, not, mm-hmm, just superheroes. But I would say that the superhero successes at the box office recently, Marvel in particular, have really helped drive more interest in comic books.
Interestingly enough, digital has had a hand in that as well, too. So, like, for instance, Guardians of the Galaxy, just, I think I read today, it just hit $700 million for sales in 2014. Before Guardians of the Galaxy came out, Marvel knew that that property was fairly unknown amongst people unless they were like hardcore comic book fans.
Right.
And so through digital, they started publishing digital first only comics about the characters, about Rocket Raccoon and Groot and Star-Lord, trying to get people familiar with these characters. For they were either free or like super cheap, like 99 cents or something like that. So you would go, huh, I heard this Guardians of the Galaxy thing's going to come out later this year. I'll click on that, read that. And now I sort of have an idea of who this raccoon with machine guns is when I go into the movie. Yeah.
Now I know, now I can understand how a raccoon can be an action hero.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And another interesting note you have here going back to Comixology is the Comixology Submit program. Mm-hmm. Which allows the independent comics creators a chance at having their work featured and carried by Comixology.
Yeah, so Comixology Submit, I think they unveiled that two and a half years ago. It was at a South by Southwest event. And yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier in terms of small press being able to find a place to distribute their comics since Diamond raised their premiums. Yeah, so basically what you do, I've done it with one of my books. Mm-hmm. You submit your book, you upload the files, you create an account through Comixology. You have to have an Amazon synced payments account, of course.
It's kind of like a Kickstarter so far.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot like that. And they will review it and determine whether or not the content is safe for them to distribute. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, one of my books actually got dinged for music copyright because we had lyrics from a song in there.
Oh.
And so we haven't resolved that yet. But for instance, they wouldn't carry a book for that. But like I have a horror book that made it through. It's pretty gory and they're okay with that. They format it specifically for their devices because they have a specialized, I guess it's exclusive to Comixology, system of reading called Guided View Technology, which is basically it zooms in on the panels no matter what you're on. If you're on a desktop or a tablet or a phone or whatever, it scales the panel to fit the screen of the device you're reading at the time. So it's readable.
And you can go panel by panel as opposed to page by page.
Exactly. Yeah.
I read a person's account of that and they said it took some getting used to it first. It felt a little odd just because, you know, there's a certain way that you become accustomed to reading comics, but once you get used to it, you really see the value in it.
Yeah, I am definitely a convert. I love Guided View.
Yeah.
Not just because Comixology carries some of my books, but I love Guided View because it zooms in so close on the panels that I can really see almost at life size the artist's renderings of how they're working on stuff. Usually artists work at a much larger scale than what's printed.
Right.
And so you get to see it at the scale that they were drawing it at and the fine details that you normally wouldn't notice. And I really like that. It is interesting. It sort of changes the language of comics if you're talking about it in like a formalist perspective. Because before, when you were reading comics, you were looking at all the panels on a page simultaneously, but you were reading the panels in sequential order.
Right.
Whereas now, depending on the settings that you put in Guided View, you'll just see the first panel and then I'll scroll to the second panel. So you won't necessarily see what's at the bottom of the page unless you want to.
So you could, in theory, as a creator, you could bank on certain things actually being a surprise without it requiring a page flip.
Right. Yeah. Like exactly. What you used to have as page turn cliffhangers, you can now do within panel to panel if you so choose. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
As a storyteller, I really think that's neat to give extra tools like that.
No surprise here, but you know, I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town, I use my smartphone to look up things to do, or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
So we've got some other ones that you've listed here that we can kind of mention, some of the other platforms, some of which were instrumental early on but never really stuck around, some of which are still around today. So why don't we go through some of those?
Okay, so let's start with Longbox, which was created by a comic book creator named, I think you pronounce his name, Rance Hosley.
Mm-hmm.
He is most known for being the editor of, it's a book called Comic Book Tattoo, mm-hmm. that was a compilation of comic book stories based on Tori Amos songs.
Oh, wow.
But he's done other comics work for a number of years now. He developed the idea for Longbox back in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I remember being at, I was at the Heroes Con convention in North Carolina pushing my books, and he had just done a panel about Longbox. And everybody who went to that panel came running down to the floor and they're like, oh, my God, this is going to be the next big thing. This is going to be the big break for books. Wow. We've all got to sign up with this guy. And then it completely flopped. I don't know if it was technology issues or business related issues or what, but Longbox didn't come out at a pace that was competitive enough with Comixology.
Mm.
And it was largely focused on desktop reading rather than mobile and tablet reading. So I think in the end, that is probably what killed it.
Yeah.
I think he ceased running it as a company in 2011.
Well, in 2007, that's the year when the iPhone came out. So,
yeah.
I mean, no one was predicting the huge move to mobile at mm-hmm. that time, because there had not been a smartphone to take off, at least in the United States, in the consumer marketplace. I mean, you had executives running around with BlackBerries, and that was about it.
And nobody was thinking about reading comics on their BlackBerries.
Right, right.
Yeah.
and of course the iPad, like there had been tablet computers before, but no one had made one that really appealed to the general consumer.
Yeah.
That iPad wouldn't come out till 2010.
And so when the iPad came out, Comixology was already in business.
Yeah.
But I remember then too, when the iPad came out, a lot of people were like, oh, this is going to kill print. Because everybody's going to move to digital. They're going to prefer the tablet and not having to have, you know, actual physical long boxes stacked up in their basement or their closet somewhere and just having their comics backed up on a hard drive. But that hasn't necessarily happened yet. Most digital readers still read print.
Yeah, you can't really dismiss the, like, there are people who really enjoy collecting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they love to have the physical collection, the physical representation of the thing they love. There's an emotional attachment to that. Same thing is true for people who really love books. There are people who will argue till the end of time that a physical book is going to be a superior experience than having something digital.
Right. Yeah.
I used to be one of those people. Then I moved into a house that has less space. And now I trumpet the value of the electronic format.
Yeah, I actually moved completely digital with my comics. Other than like hardbound exclusive editions that I can't download onto my device.
Yeah.
But yeah, about 2 years ago, I used to get all my comics through direct mail.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the math and it turned out that it was going to be cheaper and faster for me to get them digitally. And I wasn't going to have to fill up my closet anymore with all these books on a shelf.
Right. The downside being that you can't one day end up selling your collection for some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah. Even with some of the DRM stuff that we'll talk about later, I doubt that any of the PDFs of my comics are going to sell for anything.
So another one that we have here is Graphically.
Yeah. Graphically is a really interesting company. And again, I had personal experience with them. They carried a book of mine as well. It was started by a guy named Micah Baldwin, who is largely known as the guy who coined hashtag follow Friday on Twitter. But he, I've had some conversations with him, especially when I was working with Graphically and for distributing my book. And he's a really cool guy, but he sees himself as sort of like a startup mentor and helps out other startups. Graphically, they, again, weren't really able to compete with Comixology in terms of the publishers that they were getting exclusive rights to and how their comics were read, the actual consumption of the product. So in April of 2012, they emailed all of their creators, and I received this email, and said, hey, we are turning into an ebook company instead. And so what we're going to do now is, rather than have a digital comics platform for devices, we're going to offer distributing your comics to all of the more popular ebook platforms. Mm-hmm. So Kindle, Kobo. Is Kobo even still around?
I don't know that it's still around, but I do remember it.
Kobo, they did Nook, Google, and iTunes, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so if you were already one of their partners, they automatically did that for you. But if you wanted to submit a new book, you would pay a fee, you'd get an ISBN number, and they would distribute it to those different systems. That didn't work out so well for them. They tried to sort of market it as a children's book market rather than comics, and that didn't really work out for them. And in May of this year, they closed their doors. The stories that I've heard are that they weren't acquired by this company, but that six of their remaining employees were hired by a company called Blurb that specializes in print-on-demand books.
And then, sadly, some of the creators have been kind of left out.
Yeah, there have been a number of complaints that creators who were expecting payment from Graphically never saw a check show up in their bank account or their direct deposit show up for books that they sold through Graphically.
And this is kind of it's sort of a microcosm of what you saw with the .com bubble burst too.
Yeah.
You see like a flood of competitors, and then with the .com bubble, it was just suddenly confidence totally was pulled away from the entire industry.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way iTunes rose to the top of the MP3 game, I would say that Comixology has sort of carved itself out, you know, a niche for digital comics. Yeah.
I like that you have Iverse here because, of course, they distribute my favorite comic of all time.
Archie?
Yeah.
Yeah, Archie comics are getting to be awesome, man. Like, there's been some really cool stuff that's been happening in the Archie universe lately. Like, they have this horror book called Afterlife with Archie.
Yeah.
That is just, I love this stuff, but yeah.
I remember hearing about the one about, like, looking into the future, and there's some pretty crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, they've been doing some really kind of progressive, interesting stuff with Archie, but yeah.
Things you would not have predicted.
No, not at all.
The past of Archie comics.
Yeah. But yeah, they're exclusively distributed through iVerse, and their app is called Comics Plus. And iVerse is another one that had difficulty competing with Comixology. They haven't closed their doors yet, and really, like, they're... The niche that they're trying to make for themselves right now is that they want to distribute comics to libraries as the same way that like Overdrive distributes ebooks to libraries. Mm-hmm. And so they've made a library edition of their app, and they're marketing themselves pretty heavily to the library world. So we'll see if that plays out or not. A lot of it's going to depend on licensing with their publishers.
Sure. Then you've got Dark Horse, where they have their own app.
Yeah, Dark Horse is interesting in that unlike a lot of other companies who all just signed on with Comixology or iVerse or Graphically, Dark Horse said, hold up, we're not going to just jump into this digital comics game. And they waited and developed their own app. Mm-hmm. So, again, they're not having to split a percentage with that distributor.
Right.
They're keeping a huge chunk of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the interesting thing there is that you know, this is one of those deals that makes it tough to be a consumer in the sense that you can't go to a one-stop shop and get all the things you want. You have to have multiple apps. If you are a true connoisseur of comics and you like lots of titles across lots of publishers, it makes it more complicated.
Like with reading the comics themselves, you have to really be aware of the landscape and the almost continuity of where to get digital comics. Yeah. Because they're kind of all over the place right now.
Then you've got Electric Comics.
That was just announced this year, and they haven't actually, as far as I know, distributed or produced anything, but the claim to fame is that Alan Moore, who, you know, wrote Watchmen and From Hell and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, is widely regarded as one of the best writers of comics. Mm-hmm. He is part of the team that is putting together Electra Comics, along with his daughter, Leah Moore, and her husband, John Repian.
Cool. And then we've got this self-published category here.
Yeah, so some people have decided that rather than sign on with Comixology or any of these other distribution services, that what they'll do is they'll put out their own comics, but they'll do it as PDFs. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the Radiohead model of distributing an album digitally. And the two guys who are really at the forefront of this are Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin, who produce a book called The Private Eye. Mm-hmm. And their digital distribution company is called Panel Syndicate. And so these are DRM-free downloads of their books. You choose how much you pay for them, which is an interesting model as well. And basically, you can do whatever you want with the PDF once you've downloaded it. You can also get, there are other formats too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I primarily read PDFs, but there's CBZ, which is a comics reader type software.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it does display both sides of the democratization of the web, right?
Yeah, but I would say this, like with Radiohead, the reason why these guys are able to succeed is because they're both already big names in the world of comics. Brian K. Vaughan wrote for Lost.
Yeah.
And was fairly successful with the books that he wrote for Marvel and independently, and is still writing. He writes an independent book for Image right now called Saga that's incredibly successful. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that later, actually. Saga actually ties into some of this digital comics stuff. But the thing that's really interesting about The Private Eye, this is like maybe only a month ago, is they announced that they had made, they were vague about it, but they said six figures in terms of dollars that they'd made off of their book. And a number of downloads, which is pretty big for an independent comic book.
Well, yeah, especially if you're with such a dramatic, different approach to pricing. I mean, the fact that it's one of those things that the cynic immediately thinks, oh, everyone's just going to go for the lowest amount. Or
they'll
free.
Pay a penny. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or they'll wait till they'll give their friend a nickel. And then the friend downloads it, and since it's DRM free, they'll just copy it.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're seeing, which is great. I also like that it is a great illustration. Like you point out, you know, these are guys who are known. So the average creator is not necessarily going to see any kind of success on the same level as what they saw.
Right.
And also it shows that, you know, you can try and go it alone, but it is often a lot easier if you're using an established platform. We see this across all sorts of media as well. YouTube's a great example, right? I could create my own video, web video stuff, not use YouTube, but that's where the audience is.
Right.
And
absolutely.
That's where I'm going to get the most eyes. And it's also, they've already done a lot of the work for me. So sure, if I try to monetize it, they're going to take a cut.
Yeah. And they have a pre-built in monetization system
right,
too,
whereas, which also makes it easier.
The Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin are having to do their own books on this too, I would assume,
right.
Or pay somebody to do it. For
right.
Them.
Right. Which is another, that's another expense and another thing that you're accountable for.
Yeah.
Then we've got Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah. So both Marvel and DC, distribute their comics through Comixology and other platforms. But Marvel has this thing called Marvel Unlimited, which I'm a subscriber to. Mm-hmm. I just subscribed in the last couple of months and I've been enjoying it. It's $10 a month and you get access to almost their entire library up to 6 months ago of publication. So you don't get comics that have been printed in the last 6 months, but everything before that. There's some obscure stuff that isn't in there. If you're really hunting down for some weird comic Marvel published in 1968 or something like that, you might not find it. But there is a lot of content in there. And, you know, if you factor in that, like, the average print comic costs $3.99 nowadays, if you just read three books on Marvel Unlimited a month, it's worth your money.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen one of the biggest criticisms I've seen toward digital comics is not any sort of limitation that is due to the technology. It's that you actually have the potential to have an entire backlog available for purchase. So for those folks who want the complete collection of a title.
Yeah.
You know, it may be prohibitively expensive or impractical for them to do that with a print edition. And they may just want to have, I just want this full story. I want this character arc, or I want this, incredible storyline that went through multiple issues, from beginning to end. And I can't find it in the physical format. Or if I do, you know, one of those issues is ridiculously expensive.
Right.
And,
yeah.
So
especially the collector's item type stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this would be the opportunity for companies to actually continue to make money off of old IP they have, intellectual property that they have. Because for the most part, if you're going out to a comic book store and you see a copy of a comic that you really wanted and it happens to be a few hundred dollars, here's the newsflash. That few hundred dollars is not going to the company that published it.
It's a used copy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So this is a way for them to actually make money off of stuff they've already made. I imagine that the rights issues are probably pretty complicated with that too, depending upon how the contracts were formed for the various writers and artists. That is a story all on its own for the comics world.
That would be a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, we could,
probably a whole nother show.
Exactly. Not an
episode.
That would be, we could do comic stuff and have just an arc of episodes that all talked about the complicated contract issues that have plagued the comics industry.
And as we were recording this last week, the Kirby estate settled with Marvel, actually, which is pretty historic.
Yeah, that was one of those big stories for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So this is it's not a huge shock to me that the entire backlog is not available. It is the dream, right? To have that access where you can suddenly say, like, I've always been scared to ask people, but now I can finally find out what Secret Wars really was all about.
Yeah. You know? There you go. Well, that's very timely. They just announced this week that there's another Secret Wars coming out in 2015.
They're doing a third one? It would be the third one, right?
They're not going to call it Secret Wars 3.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just being called Secret Wars, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. At least that's what
if they're bringing the Beyonder back, I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
At any rate, so we talked a bit about the pricing. The pricing can range from around the same price as what you would find for the print book. Sometimes you'll find it cheaper. And we also talked about how with the platform taking a cut and the distributor taking a cut and the creators getting a small cut, sometimes a small cut, that it can sometimes be less profitable for a creator than the print, depending upon the actual, how that all falls out.
Sure. And I will say this though, too, that like once you've put your book on a platform, there aren't costs involved usually right. for you. You don't have to pay Comixology to put your book on their platform yet. Cross your fingers.
Yeah. They just take a cut of whatever you make.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, like for instance, my book that's on there right now, I think I made like 40 cents off of it, like
congratulations.
Last quarter or something like
that. I've seen my dad's a writer. I've seen royalty checks about that amount.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not living off of it, but at least people are reading it.
But the neat thing is that, you know, while you could say, the cut for a creator is smaller, the potential audience is larger. Like the fact that, you know, you're going to find comic book stores that aren't going to carry certain titles just because they figure that their readers aren't that interested, or maybe they've only ordered a few copies of them and therefore there's not a whole lot for
right.
people who are interested.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There is some regulation about what kind of comics can be distributed through Comixology's app.
Sure.
But that is mostly due to content. Graphic violence or sexuality,
sure.
stuff like that. But yeah, independent small press stuff is in there just as much as Wolverine and Secret Wars or whatever big, you know, Superman title that you can think of. And they're by and large, yeah, you could say that it's an equal playing field, but those companies have handshake deals with Comixology. They're
sure.
featured in the really like hot click areas on the site or on the app.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also have great sales.
Yeah.
Every Monday Marvel does a sale where some Marvel series is 99 cents a book or something like that. And pretty much every weekend there's a big sale from a number of publishers.
Well, and what's interesting there to me as well is that, you know, we could see a lot of implementation of, especially now that Amazon has Comixology, seeing more implementation of the sort of algorithms that Amazon uses to suggest alternate or additional titles, things that you would like based upon the stuff that you already have shown an interest in.
Yeah, Comixology did do that and does do that. But
awesome.
I think it's going to get better probably as part of their acquisition.
And that's fantastic. That becomes a discovery tool. I mean, discovery is like the big thing for a lot of different apps out there. And, you know, it was a real buzzword for a while, but it's
right.
generally one of those things that I rely upon, like whether it's Netflix, Amazon, whatever, Pandora is a great example of me discovering stuff I did not know about, but because of my viewing habits, or my consumption habits,
right.
I am almost guaranteed to enjoy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And one of the things that's really unique about digital comics as well, at least in theory, is that we know that there is a stigma for certain readers of walking into a comic book store and buying a comic book.
Yeah.
And that they, for whatever reason it is, they may feel uncomfortable about doing that or, mm-hmm. and for that reason, maybe quit reading comics years ago.
Sure.
With digital comics, you don't have that stigma because you're just sitting on your device. And
right.
so in theory, we're getting back an audience.
A large part of that. And I mean, you know, we were dancing around it right there, but a large part of that is the female audience.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know? Yeah. Right. You see all kinds of, one of my favorite sites that, focuses on comics and sci-fi popular culture is the Mary Sue.
Yes.
And it focuses on it from a female perspective. And yes, they often joke about the ideas of what it's like to be a woman going into a comic book store.
Right. Like, you're buying this for your boyfriend.
Yeah. And sometimes those are stereotypical and sometimes they are. It depends on your local comic book store.
Yeah.
You know? It depends on the culture and environment that they
sure.
build there. But
sure.
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. A lot of it is based more on kind of the generalized idea of what a mm-hmm. comic store is. I mean, we've seen that depiction multiple times in various forms of media. There's obviously like the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly. That stereotype right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been in those comic stores though. So.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That was back in the '80s. Maybe they're a little better than that now. We've got a couple of comic book stores in Atlanta that I've seen, that seem to be pretty cool about that sort of thing.
Atlanta has a decent comic book community, both in terms of creators and retailers. Yeah.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town. I use my smartphone to look up things to do or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
I wanted to talk about this regulation issue that you've laid out in the notes, because it is really interesting. It's one of those things that when you first think about it, you would think, oh, the digital approach would be something that would free you up from the restrictions that you might face in a brick and mortar store.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the case.
Right. Especially when you're working together with big companies like Apple.
Yeah.
So Apple is very careful about what goes into their ecosystem.
Yeah.
I think most tech stuff listeners are probably aware of that, and that how controlled the environment is in terms of what apps you can download and what content's available there.
And what's interesting is that they don't necessarily publish what the criteria are.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like submitting a film to the MPAA. You can never be sure if you're going to get that hard R, if you're going to get a PG-13, that sort of thing. In a similar way, with the Apple, App Store, you don't necessarily know, you know, what things are going to be, what things are just going to glide on by, or what things are going to hit a brick wall.
It does. It really depends. And so what's interesting is that, yes, Comixology was reluctant to distribute some material for a while. And then back to this Brian K. Vaughan, who is a pretty well-known guy and has a popular book called Saga. Mm-hmm. In April of 2013, Saga number 12 came out, and it had a very small scene in it. You would miss it if you blinked.
Mm-hmm.
Of gay sex between two characters. And it was pulled out of the Comixology store the day that it was released. People were furious about it. people being readers. I mean,
right.
Brian K. Vaughan himself issued a statement about it and thought that it was Apple, that it was right. because of Apple's censorship. It turned out that actually what was happening was that Comixology, in anticipation of Apple's policies, mm-hmm. were doing their own pre-censoring before right. they were submitting stuff.
Right.
And so they saw that in the issue and they said, there's no way that's going to get past Apple. And they didn't bother submitting it. And then I think like within 2 or 3 days, they submitted it to Apple and it was up in the store and everything was forgotten.
Mm. But it's one of those things where, because of Apple's reputation of the way they handle things in the App Store, I mean, Comixology, when you look at it, it's handling titles from so many different publishers.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, this is a big business thing. If this were something where suddenly the Comixology app was discontinued in the Apple Store, that would be
right.
catastrophic. So you can understand
$90 million a year catastrophic.
Yeah. So, yeah. so you can understand why they were being so conservative in that mm-hmm. sense. Although certainly some communication from Comixology might have been merited.
Yeah. I suspect that since then, so that was over a year ago, that yeah. they have developed a much better line of communication between their publishers and themselves regarding content like that. But that yeah. said, there is still content that's produced by fairly big publishers like Image Comics, who are the publisher of Saga, that you cannot buy in app mm-hmm. Through, you know, you can't buy anything in app anymore.
Right.
Through iOS, but through Android mm-hmm. and other devices. So like there's a book that's by Matt Fraction and a guy named Chip Zdarsky called Sex Criminals. It's mm-hmm. been pretty popular in the last year or two. And a couple of those issues have been banned from the in-app purchases. But if you go to their actual site, Comixology's actual site, you can purchase them there and then download them later to
gotcha.
Your device.
It's yeah. just not one that you can buy directly from the mobile device anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we mentioned the idea of DRM as well and
yeah.
how that's a big issue. I mean, that's a big issue with any kind of media that's distributed over the internet. There are, of course, outlets that are putting out files DRM free so that you don't have any restriction there. That seems to, as a consumer, you want that because it means that you have the freedom to enjoy the content in whatever way you choose.
Yeah.
For example, you know, I've got a smartphone, I've got a tablet, I've got a laptop, I've got a desktop. And I don't have a big household. I don't have other people living with me other than my wife. So it's really just going to be me looking at whatever the content is. And I want to be able to do it wherever. However, from a creator standpoint, a distributor standpoint, I totally understand the reticence to allow someone to do whatever they want with it.
Right.
Because what if I'm the guy who I live in a college dorm and I've got this thing and now all the buddies that I have in my dorm, not just my dorm room, but my entire dorm now have it too because I've made copies for them.
Right.
That's the fear. As it turns out, the music industry kind of bore this out. If you make something easy enough to purchase and you make it easy enough to consume, people purchase it and they consume it. And the number of pirates who are actually illegally stealing stuff is relatively low. I mean, that's a small number comparatively speaking.
Yeah, it's shrinking too.
Yeah.
Piracy in comics was a big deal before digital comics were
sure.
Coming around in 2007 because comic pirates, that's a weird word mm-hmm. to say, mm-hmm. but they were scanning the pages in and then making their own PDFs or CBZ files
sure.
and distributing on the torrents and such. But there was concern over that and how that was going to affect the print industry. But, you know, everybody's still here. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure you could go online right now and still find a bunch of piracy sites.
Sure.
However, you're right in that, digital comics and the ease mm-hmm. of purchasing it and the better reading experience
right.
that you get through it.
You don't have to worry about getting a virus.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is another
exactly.
big deal. That actually is true for all forms of media as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's only when you see the resistance from the merchant side or the distributor or the creator side. It's only then when you start to see the rise in piracy because people start yeah. to feel like there's no legitimate way for them to get the thing they want, but they still want that thing.
There's actually a really cool story, and I didn't put this in the notes, but I'd love to tell it to you.
Sure.
So there's a guy named Steve Lieber, who is a comic book artist. He lives in Portland, and he worked on an independent book called Underground with a mm-hmm. writer named Jeff Parker. And when their book came out in trade format, Steve realized that on 4chan, people were distributing links to pirated versions of Underground. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting upset and yelling at them, what he did was he went over and he started interacting with the community there and engaging with them and saying, oh, hey, like, you know, I'd just like you to know, like, the way that this book works out is that this is how we, you know, this is how I make my money off of it. This is how I make my living. Here's the breakdown. He talked about that traditional breakdown of money between publisher and distributor and creator to them. And Underground saw this huge spike in orders on mm-hmm. Amazon that month. I mean, it was tremendous. The people said, oh, cool, we get it. This guy, you know, needs to make a living off this stuff. We like his content. And they went and paid money for it.
Yeah, I've seen that kind of story repeated in various forms of media. And now we're these days, like in other kinds of media, you're seeing Patreon.
Yeah.
And patrons and Patreon are directly supporting the folks who are making the stuff that mm-hmm. they love.
Yeah.
And I'm a Patreon supporter of a couple of different things.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and so we're starting to see that there really is this model there. The thing that needed to be there was the support system for it to happen.
Exactly.
And once it was there, it did. So it's interesting because you had the companies vilifying consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumers vilifying the companies. And then once the structure was there, everyone said, oh, now we can work together. We can actually do
exactly
what we need to
and
do.
And it turns out that it's $90 million a year worth of business.
Yes. Yeah. Now, to conclude this great conversation, we have to bring up something that kind of shows the vulnerability of the Comixology approach. I'm specifically talking about an event that happened back in March 2013, the beginning of South by Southwest, when Marvel decided to do a big event by giving away 700 first issues, and it turned out some people wanted them.
Yeah, a lot of people like those Marvel comics. And everybody tried to download all 700 of them all at the same time.
Now, Christian, let me ask you something. When a huge number of people try to access a limited amount of information on a limited number of servers, what typically happens?
Well, it crashed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was not just the Marvel comics that were for free that crashed,
right,
but all of the comics available on Comixology in total.
Right.
Which included the Comixology Submit books that had launched also at South by Southwest. So there were a lot of independent creators who were like, I already have a hard enough time competing with Wolverine and Spider-Man for dollars.
Right.
But now, because they did this big giveaway, I think Comixology was shut down for like 3 days, I want to say.
And this really goes to show the vulnerability of having a cloud-based kind of approach to anything.
Yeah.
So people even who had purchased stuff already were having trouble accessing things. They couldn't access things.
Yeah, and that's part of the DRM thing, too, that's been big with Comixology this year, is that a lot of people argued against digital comics for a while because they said, well, at the end of the day, you're just renting your comics. You don't own them.
Right.
You don't own a file that you can turn to. It's off in the cloud somewhere.
Right.
And in the last year, Comixology has twice, I think, made announcements that a number of publishers have gone DRM free.
So you could actually download the file as opposed to just accessing the file.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the process of downloading my entire archive onto like a 1 terabyte hard drive at my house right now.
The beauty of the cloud is that it allows you to access your content on whatever device, you know, that has been authorized for it, wherever you are. That's the beauty. The downside is that if the cloud service goes down, you don't have access to that material.
Yeah.
And a very similar thing we could mention, there was a day, I think it was Tuesday, where Google Docs had some issues earlier in the day, and suddenly we couldn't access Google Docs. And a lot of us are using Google Docs now to help create show notes, like what we're doing right now.
Right, exactly.
And then suddenly you don't have access to that, and you realize this is a brilliant tool until it doesn't work.
and I think we all have this kind of magical idea that a company as big as Google never possibly crash, but it happens.
Yeah, it does happen. It's again, you know, not to put too much of a negative on cloud computing, because obviously the same sort of problems can happen on a single machine. If I had If I had all these notes just stored on my computer and my computer crashed, I'd be just as, you know, out of luck.
Or also, like, if a brick and mortar store said, we're going to give away 700 Marvel issues to every person who walks in the door, you know, like, there'd be so many people inside the store, it might fall over.
Same sort of thing with a brick and mortar store saying, we're not going to carry this title because we object to the content.
Exactly.
It's the sort of thing that does happen. So when it happens digitally, we tend to react in a very specific way. But if you think of it like, well, what if we just had, you know, translate this into an actual physical location? Would we be as surprised if it happened there? And often the answer is no.
Right.
It's just that we seem to think there's a different set of criteria to judge the digital experience from the physical.
It is that I want it now.
Yeah.
Sort of mentality that we've become accustomed to with our content,
and
which is
the fact
is
that
great.
The
I
fact that
it.
Digital can allow you to have it now is, you know, it's an, like we said, an enabler.
If I'm trying to watch Netflix and The Ring starts spinning 10 minutes into a movie that I'm watching, I get frustrated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to acknowledge, you know what, like there's a, how many customers does Netflix have out there? And maybe my bandwidth isn't so great or something.
Yeah. Usually I just get mad at my internet service provider.
Yeah.
That's a common thing at my house. Well, Christian, thank you so much for coming on the show and for suggesting this topic. It was really cool to get into this. And for people who are interested in learning more about your work, why don't you tell them where to find it?
Yeah, the best place to find me is at christiansager.tumblr.com. That's where my personal work is posted, the comic stuff that I work on, and also I have links to the content that I work on here at How Stuff Works. But you can find me here at How Stuff Works. I write for and sometimes host Brain Stuff. I'm currently writing for our newest show, What the Stuff, which I think your first episode debuted,
while I was on vacation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to write for Stuff of Genius and, host, new episodes of that, but that show's on hiatus while we're working on new content.
Yeah. But keep your eyes open. You never know when something that we put on the back shelf comes back up. Well, Christian, thank you again. And guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, please get in touch with me. Let me know what you think. Send me an email. The address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or drop me a line on Twitter, Facebook, or Tumblr. The handle at all three of those is techstuffhsw. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.